saying preparing. I don't know. Here we go, maybe.
Okay.
All right. Good afternoon, everybody. It is Angie Atkinson, and I am here with the lovely and talented Dana Morningstar. Dana, welcome back.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here.
I am always thrilled when you are here.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah. Anywho, yeah. So for those of you who are new around here, Dana and I do this stream once every week, approximately. And we do it on Tuesdays, and we alternate channels. So this week we're here on this channel, and next week we'll be over on Dana's channel, which is Thrive After Abuse, here on YouTube. You can also find Dana and all of her amazing support groups and content all around the internet at Thrive After Abuse or thriveafterabuse.com. She has Facebook support groups as well. Mm-hmm. All right, now I hear myself talking. That's never good. Here we go. Anyway, okay, mute. Okay. So today we thought we would start with some of the questions from last week that we got. And then we thought, I have some questions I asked in the Spanily group, and we're going to, I mean, I asked a question in the Spanily group. What did you want to know? And you guys sent over your request. So that's what we're going to start today. Dana, do you want to start us off with our comments from last week?
Sure. And if you guys are interested in asking a question for these live streams, please ask them down below after the video airs, I guess, or is up on YouTube. So down in the comment section, ask a question or leave a comment, and we will read it the following week on the air. So let's see, what we have from last week was just a couple comments here. One is from Holly Ann, who says, I can't explain how much you two ladies have impacted me, mostly understanding what I'm going through and the narcissist. God bless you always.
Thank you.
And yes, thank you. And this is from Eva, who says, I have to say this feels like divine therapy. There's actually something healing about getting your own words read back to you. There is so much surfacing from the past and nightmares and questioning of how horrible it really was. And it was much worse than I want to remember. The mind tends to forget, I guess, much like women forget the pain of childbirth. Anyway, I've been watching Angie and Dana for years without a word, but now I'm talking. Now I'm in the process of really processing it, healing, and it's stirring trouble for sure, but I'm not in the most emergency of narcissists bugging me daily in my personal life anymore. Just saying, this feedback in the stream has its healing effects. When it's personal, it's almost like you touch me spiritually. We're all connected. Thank you.
I love that.
Yeah, I do too. It's great. It was kind of interesting. So the comments I pulled out, the vast majority of them had kind of this spiritual bend to them, which I don't remember touching on anything spiritual. So that's just kind of a strange, I don't know, just kind of strange. But this one is from Mindy, who makes the comment about anyone who is staying in a relationship because they are Christian should read Timothy 2, verse 3. There are other verses that describe other types of narcissists, but the message is the same. Christians should avoid narcissists. Consider the amount that narcissists that cheat. If there is something that most narcissists do, it's cheat. The Bible tells us that cheating is a reason for divorce. I know that they say from the pulpit about making things work, but in a Christian codependency groups, they explain the exceptions. Don't stay with a narcissist or a sociopath because you're afraid of letting God down. And and I guess I just wanted to also mention there's dozens of Bible verses that talk about the power of discernment and kind of who, regardless of a person's faith, I guess, that ability to discern and to be able to know, okay, just because we committed to something or that we're in a relationship doesn't mean that you basically need that you need to put up with limitless levels of mistreatment. Mm-hmm. So boundaries are always valid.
I absolutely agree. And I think even some of the most strict religions on this stuff, Christianity, and I can't say for all, but I can say for the strict Christian type religions, even Jehovah's Witnesses, they have limits, you know, to which a person should allow themselves to be subjected. I had a client, the reason I mentioned Jehovah's Witnesses is because I had a client who was a Jehovah's Witness who was in a very abusive relationship. And she expressed similar feelings to me, and but she worked through it, and she worked with her ministers. I don't think they're called that, but whatever they're called, mm-hmm. the people that are like ministers, and they agreed with her. So I think that's really powerful and really important. I think a lot of people do stay because they think they have to. So I'm really glad you brought that up today.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Well, I guess let's hop into the chat here. Let me get over to your YouTube channel.
Yes.
And see what I can find. Do you have anything?
Have a couple of things. So first of all, I do have some things from, and we'll get to those in a minute. I do have a bunch of questions from the SPAN group from earlier today that I told
right.
live. But first let's get to a few in the chat and then we'll come back to those in a minute. I have a question from Julie. And she says, I keep going back into a relationship with a narcissistic person, and I can't understand why I keep going back. I need to be a little stronger. What can I do to keep away forever and move on with my life? I really like that question because I know that sometimes it feels difficult. It feels like you can't. I'm going to just turn my sound off of my phone really quick. Okay. Sorry about that. Sometimes it feels like you can't leave because you don't want to be alone, or you don't want to. The fear of being alone, I think, is a large percentage of why people go back. But I think on the flip side of that, there are other more practical things to think about. Like people worry about, how am I going to support myself? How am I going to, you know? So I think if I were you, Julie, I would start with those basic things and, you know, get yourself set up in some sort of a way that you feel secure, or as secure as you can. But then on top of that, I think it's about your mindset, and it's about your ability to know that, number one, you deserve better. Number two, you should just keep going. It's okay. Nobody can see you. Sorry, somebody's walking through the room. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I think one thing that helps my clients a lot, many clients have tried this and met, I would say probably 80% of them find it effective. And that is to make a list of all the things, all the reasons you're leaving. And if you can make the list during a time when you're feeling especially emotional. So like if you're planning to leave, let's say, then each time this person hurts you, and I mean in any way, emotionally, physically, otherwise, sit down afterward and write down exactly how you feel in like painful, grating detail. You know, use your language to the best of your ability, even if it doesn't seem like it makes sense. Because when you come back to it later, then what you do, I usually suggest people do this in a notebook, but you can just use your phone if you want to, and just literally, like in Evernote or whatever note you have, put down all your feelings and save it. Because there will come a time, like you just mentioned, Julie, where you will be tempted. It's abuse amnesia we get. We forget the bad stuff and we remember the good stuff, right? So if you find yourself in a position that you're wanting to go back, then you can pull out your note or your notes and you can remember how it felt. I think that's the why we fall back in, and plus we believe that they're going to change when they promise they're going to change, but they don't change. So I don't know. Dana, what are your thoughts on that?
Going back? I agree with that. I think it really is helpful to make a list, and you know, that'll kind of shake you out of that cognitive dissonance and that kind of going back and forth and hoping this time things will be different. So I would also encourage you to think about, what is the hook that has you? And if it's a pattern, then, because these hooks, when we're in situations where, you know, we're staying because we're hoping things will be other than something they are, it's generally because these types of situations are meeting some sort of need for us, generally a need that's gone unmet for so long that it's now a vulnerability. So if you, for example, if you've been walking around feeling unloved or unimportant for a long time, and this person is just laying it on thick, and there's a lot of kind of that love bombing, or just a lot of attention and affection and all of this, and it feels so good. If that's the hook, then realizing that and then trying to meet that need in healthier ways. So expanding your support network, your social circle, these kinds of things, and then getting really clear with yourself of if you're dealing with a manipulative person, then this is just all smoke and mirrors, that this relationship isn't a relationship. It's just wasting your time. And using strong language like that to cut through that misplaced hope. So you can see the situation clearly of there's nothing here except pain.
Yep. 100%. I want to add this comment from Nancy here. Hey, Nance. Mm-hmm. And because it kind of actually relates to both of these questions in a way, both of them, the religion thing, as well as the, as well as what we just talked about. She says, I'm a Christian. I was Southern Baptist I was with my daughter's father for 12 years because of my beliefs. Leaving was the best thing I ever did. Think about the example you're setting for your children. Now, I don't want anyone to think that by pulling this comment out, I'm trying to shame you or make you feel bad about yourself, because believe me, I know you've had enough of that, right, from other people. Mm-hmm. But I did find for myself, if you do have kids, for myself, I'm not proud of this, but it is what it is. My kids were my catalyst. They were the reason in every case where I walked away from someone who was toxic. Every time. And I'm not saying that was right. That was totally unacceptable. I should have been more about my own needs at that time, but I just didn't understand. So sometimes you just take the catalyst you can get and then you go heal from there. So if that helps you today, be helped. Okay. Now, Dana, I don't know if you want to peek through the chat. I thought maybe I'd pull out the next one of the comments from my group sure. today. Okay. All right, so we have, let me just scroll on down here. Okay, we have several people asking for more tips on breaking the trauma bond and how to get back out into the world. And that's a big ask, but I think we can maybe touch on that. And then maybe also how to navigate through the emotions. So let's start with the breaking the trauma bond. What are your best tips, do you think? Well, I mean, do you want me to start or do you want to start with those?
Either way is fine.
Go ahead.
Well, I guess maybe let's explain what a trauma bond is for people that might be new here. Trauma bonds are the bonds that are formed through the highs and lows of, in this case, through the highs and lows of a relationship. So it's, and this is also known as intermittent reinforcement. So when we're getting our needs met some of the time, but then not met other times, what happens is our brain is trying to figure out, okay, well, I kind of did this thing one time and then I was able to get my need met, but I did the same thing another time and my need wasn't met. So for example, I was really, I made dinner for my spouse and they were very loving and kind to me, but then the next time I did it, they got really upset. And so it's confusing when we're getting kind of these mixed messages. And of course, with an abusive relationship, it's even more extreme, highs and lows. And it can be, that leads to a lot of confusion about how to make things work when, you can't figure out how to kind of appease the other person. Or just to kind of keep peace in this relationship. And when any of us are threatened with a loss of something, so this goes back to the extreme highs and lows. The highs are when the good times are really good, it tends to be, lots of attention and affection and great. But when the lows are low, it tends to be, well, if you don't do this, then I'm going to leave. I'm going to divorce you. You're going to get silent treatment. You're going to get punished. And that's what causes those feelings of uneasiness and really kind of unhinged levels of anxiety in a person. So on a more mild end, you can see that the erratic behavior that it kicks off in a person when there's not that huge level of emotional involvement. So for example, like with eBay, right? So let's say you bid on an item and you're somewhat interested in it, but as soon as somebody outbids you, that level of interest ramps up of, oh no, now I really want it that much more because I'm threatened with the fact that I might not get it. It's that times 100 in a relationship of, well, this relationship really isn't working for me, but now if I might lose them, my interest in them increases tenfold. So there's different dynamics with the trauma bond. And so breaking these can be very difficult if, I think in large part, if we're not, if we don't know what they are, because those feelings, unfortunately, can be very easily mistaken for love. It's that feeling of unhinged neediness of I'll do anything, to, I'll throw myself in, you know, in harm, in front of harm's way in order to make this relationship work. I'm willing to sacrifice my pride, my self-esteem, my dignity, you know, whatever it takes to, because this is somehow love. And when we're able to realize this is not love, it's not even in the same zip code as love. It's just an intense emotional response that's caused by the highs and lows of an abusive relationship. When we're able to correctly identify what's going on, I think it's a lot easier to walk away from it. It's when people confuse this level of intensity for sincerity and they confuse it with love, that that's what makes it so difficult, because then everything else kind of feels flat after that of, oh, well, these, I've never been loved like this before, but I've also never been hurt like this before. And for a person who has been walking around feeling unloved or unimportant for a long time, or that's never experienced that love bombing, that can easily be confused for love, but it's not. So yeah. What you got, Angie?
I mean, I would agree with all of that. and I think that, you know, let me just add on to the other side of that. The other part of that question was how to get back out into the world. I mean, and I think, you know, on the breaking side, everything you said, as you probably already know, I agree with. Outside of that, I would say in the moment stuff that helped me and that still helps me when I have rough times on almost any issue is a pattern interrupt situation. This is more of an immediate temporary fix. So if you are, let's say you're struggling and you're like, I just want to call him. You might do something as simple as, you know what, tell yourself, I'm going to wait 20 minutes and then go outside on your front porch and do something different, you know, or go do the dishes or go take a shower, comb your hair, brush your teeth, whatever, something like that. I have one client right now who I've asked, she's struggling with checking social media on someone, and it's an addiction. You know, it really is. And I really see trauma bonding as almost an addiction for especially the survivor. We know that these relationships can affect the same part of our brain as drugs or alcohol and make us, you know, feel addicted. So why was I telling you that? Because addiction. I lost my train of thought. Well, darn it. Anyway, oh, right. I have one client who is struggling with that right now. And I asked her to wait 20 minutes between, you know, before, like when she has the urge to the time that she checks. She's like, I'm going to tell you that I'm going to do that, but I'm not really going to do that. So I suggested 1 minute to start, you know, start with 1 minute, wait 1 minute. So that's more of a delayed gratification thing. But then once you find that you can wait 1 minute, you know, the next time wait 2 minutes and so on and so forth. And what I find to be true is that sometimes just the delay in itself will be enough to make you rethink your idea. And I'm going to just be really honest with you. This idea came to me because in the process of losing weight, I learned that if you wait 20 minutes, your brain learns that it's full. Your stomach takes 20 minutes to tell your brain, which sounds stupid, but it's not exactly connected, but it still works in a similar way, because it just, in this case, it's just a matter of giving yourself some space. So I would say the pattern interrupt, the time period, these are things for good in the moment coping techniques, but also don't when you can take the time to let yourself grieve the relationship, let yourself cry if you need to, you know, kind of don't just stop yourself. I've seen a lot of people just stop themselves from progressing, from going forward because of trauma bonding. And they might be single for 5 years because they're not ready, and that's okay. But if you want to, and you feel like you're ready to start to heal and move forward, you have to take some of the advice that Dana gave, and you have to do what you need to do to go forward with, I think my biggest mistake in all of this was was not feeling my feelings, not allowing myself to feel my feelings. So I think we all have to take the time to do that. And when I finally did that, that's when I actually started to heal. Before that, it was all like a Band-Aid and I just didn't know. You know what I mean? So anywho, and then getting back out in the world, I would suggest just baby steps. Dana talks all the time about meetup.com, and they've got really, really great programs. I will tell you that in some of your smaller towns and more rural areas, it might be a little harder. And so in those cases, I would consider, you know, joining a spiritual community, blah, blah, blah. I'm saying blah, 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 because we're in COVID right now. And so a lot of the time right now, your best way to connect with people is going to be online, but with new people. But once COVID's over, then I would say join those meetup groups and get involved with your local spiritual community or your, you know, like they have little, sometimes they'll have like a town club sort of where people like the Rotary Club or whatever, where they go around and they help make the town nicer or they document the history or whatever it is. Just look around and see what's available. And I would recommend getting back out there, meaning getting out there and meeting other people besides romantic prospects for a while. I think it's important to build a support network if you don't already have one. And if this is a romantic relationship that you're getting past, maybe give yourself plenty of time to heal and don't really jump into a full-on relationship until you're healed, until you're ready. Otherwise, you, one of two things will happen. Either you'll end up with another one just like him, but just with a different face, or you'll end up maybe acting in ways that you don't want to act to someone who you really care about. And so I would say that if you do happen to meet Mr. or Ms. Wright in the few minutes or months after you get, you know, after you separate from a narcissist, then I would, you know, explain that you need to take it really slow. And if somebody's not willing to wait, then maybe they're not your person, you know? So something to think about. Dana, any other thoughts on that?
Yeah. I would agree. I think it's definitely important to take the time to heal. What a lot of people tend to do is, you know, jump from relationship to relationship to kind of fill that void. Mm-hmm. And I agree with you completely about this level of trauma bonds and just kind of this anxious attachment in general that a lot of people tend to have, that it's until we get that addressed, it's, we're going to keep repeating these patterns of behavior. And it's very destructive. So realizing that there's, you know, that there's just nothing there with a toxic person. And with, in terms of social media, one of the things that helped me was just reminding myself, Dana, there's nothing there. There's nothing there for you. All like playing the scenario through. Okay, you go to Facebook and check the status. Then what? One of three things you're going to find, right? You're going to find either some sort of post that's geared towards you of, oh, I'm so sad. Some sort of lyrics from a song or, you know, from some sort of image of, you know, love hurts. Why can't I just make things work? Da, 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 da. That's going to pull at your heartstrings, which you know is BS. Or you're going to find something about some sort of new relationship that he's in, which is mainly kind of geared towards you to twist the knife. Mm-hmm. Or you're going to find something, you know, with him just kind of living his life, which is going to make you sad. So it might feel like in the moment, okay, this is what I need to do. I need to kind of scratch that itch. But if you play it through, there is no upside to doing that. It's not going to give you the relief or the answers that you seek. It's only going to cause more pain. So that really helped just to do that as a pattern interrupt of there's nothing there for you. Play the scenario through. What are you going to find? Yeah. And then once you do, you're like, oh, okay, yeah, you're right. Like this isn't going to work. It's a lot easier to just shut social media and then do something different. And I would encourage you also to think about what is something that you can do instead? So, because when we have this kind of compulsive behavior, it's this kind of short-term energy or emotional release type behavior of, I'm upset, so I eat ice cream. I'm stressed, so I drink. I feel sad or lonely, so I go check my ex's Facebook page. Figuring out why you're doing what you're doing, and then get clear on some other ways that you can address those emotions in a productive way. That helps to really slow down that loop.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Do you have a question for us?
I don't have a question, but I have a great comment.
Okay.
From Nina Mary, who says that, I just read a memoir entitled Our Lady of Perpetual Hunger. The author, Lisa Donovan, writes, if someone values you only when you're about to walk out the door, then you should definitely keep walking.
Darn right.
Wise words. I really like that.
I do too. It's really good. Yeah. Okay. Let's see here. I saw one just a minute ago. Let's see. Okay. So.
I've got a question if you
go
don't.
Ahead.
Okay. This is from Wine Love. Okay. It says, hi, I need advice, ladies. How do I stop blaming myself for my past toxic relationship?
Oh, that's a great question.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let me tell you, it's one of those things. I think we all do it a little bit. I think part of it is because we are capable of change and we know this, but we learn quickly that other people sometimes aren't. And usually those are the toxic people in our lives. They might pretend they're going to change, but they don't, or they temporarily change to get what they want and then they switch right back, you know, stuff like that. So one thing that always helps me is to know, number one, you know, you can dig into the psychology of it and you can know that even the most intelligent people are duped by these people. And often it starts in, I mean, I would say, you know, some people will disagree with me on this, but I would say like minimum 95% of people I've dealt with in this particular area are people who have struggled with some sort of childhood trauma or toxic parent, one or the other or both, right? And so I think we have to understand that we are sort of wired in such a way that we are more likely to blame ourselves because we cannot fix something that is unfixable. And if you guys are anything like me, I was always trying to change me to fit the other person. And one day I realized that was ridiculous. And so, but it didn't happen overnight. And it was something that I was sort of brought up with. So it was something that I carried into adulthood with me. The reason I'm telling you that is because I think that right there is exactly why we do blame ourselves. Because even sometimes we go, I knew this person was messed up, or I knew something was off. But then this other part of us was like, but I love them, or I don't want to be by myself, or I'm scared to be alone, or FOMO. You know, what if they move on and they go with somebody else, and then suddenly they, you know, realize all the things I tried to teach them or tried to show them, and now they're perfect and I don't have them anymore. All those things. But I can tell you this, in my experience, and I think Dana would agree, never saw it happen. Never, not once. Saw a narcissist move on with someone else and suddenly become perfect. Okay, let me change that. They did become perfect, but just in the same way they did with you at the beginning. You know what I'm saying? They are who they are, who they are, and they do run in cycles. So for me, my point is that if you want to figure out how to forgive yourself, what worked for me was learning the logic, understanding why this happened, the science, right? What made me susceptible? What made me tolerate it? What made them act that way in the first place? And then what should I do better? And I think one of the biggest things for me was, number one, unconditionally accepting myself, flaws and all, you know, realizing that, okay, I'm not perfect and I'm so far from perfect, right? But in any given moment, accepting all the things about me, even the things that I really dislike, and just being like, well, that's just part of what I have going on right now. You know, whether I can change it or not, this is part of me. So I think that was number one. And I think number two is learning how to set and create acceptable boundaries for myself. So boundaries that shouldn't be set by other people, right? You know, we all have, and maybe we don't all, I have deal breakers. I've always had deal breakers, but my deal breakers, I thought, you know, they were simple, you know, don't hit me, don't hit my kids, don't cheat on me. Well, now there's a couple others in there related to don't emotionally abuse me in any way type stuff, right? Don't whatever. So I think creating boundaries, creating deal breakers, and understanding your worth, which is something that takes time, but starting with accepting yourself without condition, leads to that. If you purposefully, mindfully move in that direction, that would be where I would start. Dana, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I guess I guess I'm curious to know kind of what is it that you're blaming yourself for? Is it specific things or I guess in my own experience, what has helped me is just realizing that, you know, I think Albert Einstein once said something along the lines of like, we can't solve a problem with the same thinking that got us there. And that's so true. So in all any of us can do is the best we can with the information and the level of thinking that we have at the time. And once we have additional information and think in a different way, then we can make different decisions. And so, you know, and I guess I hate to kind of just keep throwing out kind of platitudes or cliches here, but, you know, hindsight is always 20/20. And there's a reason for that, you know, because with time comes additional information, and that tends to give hindsight the clarity that we so often need. So realizing that you did the best you could with the level of thinking and the information that you had at the time. And now that you know different, you can do different.
And on that same note, there's a comment from behind me that says how to enforce those boundaries without being mean. This has been hard for me too. Do you have any thoughts on that you want to share?
That's just a step in the process. You know, a lot of people, they go from generally having very few boundaries, like you mentioned. Okay, my only deal breakers are if a person cheats on me or if they hit me, and that's it. Those are my only boundaries that they have, and everything else is flexible. Well, but you know, that's going to get a person into some trouble sooner than later because they have no ability, they have no understanding or ability to really protect themselves. Because there's a lot of gray area before things get to the point of like physical abuse, right?
Yeah.
Or flat out cheating. And so then they kind of wake up to the understanding of boundaries, and they realize, oh, I need to add some more into the mix. And then they do that. But then because they're so used to maybe even being passive, they're used to doing everything other than being assertive, because they don't feel like they deserve to be assertive, or that they've somehow earned being assertive, or they think assertiveness, they equate that to rudeness. So making those shifts from being passive, passive aggressive, or aggressive to being assertive, it's a skill set, and it takes time and practice. And most people, I would say, really struggle with being assertive, and being part of being assertive is setting boundaries in a very tactful, calm, cool, calm, collected way. Mm-hmm. And what people tend to do, especially if they've been passive or passive aggressive their whole life, they swing to the opposite end of the spectrum and they go to aggressive. And you'll hear things like, oh, I really set them straight, or I really gave them a piece of my mind, or I really laid it down, or did this. That's aggressiveness. And that's not the same as assertiveness. So, and it's difficult to be assertive, especially if we're really feeling our boundaries are violated. It's difficult to kind of take the middle ground or the higher ground and to stay assertive and realize I'm not going to let this person's behavior drag me down into the mud too. I'm going to, you know, take the higher ground. I'm going to stay assertive. Now, this isn't to say that if somebody is outrageously violating your boundaries, that you need to continue trying to communicate assertively. There are definite times where the right approach is no contact or cutting off all communication, getting a restraining order, getting distance between you and them, and not engaging with them. But that's still assertive in my book. So, you got
it. I agree. I would agree with that. And I would just say something that has been helpful for me is, you know, with new people, it's a lot easier because they don't know that you've allowed people to walk on you in the past. And so in that case, I don't even really feel that most people aren't bothered if you know, relatively healthy people, even people who aren't relatively healthy won't be bothered if you, but that's not what we're talking about here. So, but people who you don't know already, or who didn't know you as the codependent person, or whatever you want to call it. I know some people don't love that word. I don't really love that word, but those people won't, you will just act like everyone, you know. I like to come up with phrases, lists of phrases, even if you need to, that, you know, for example, if somebody says, you know, can you, you know, pick up my kids from school and drive them three towns over to this game, even though you don't even have any kids in school or whatever, you know, in this case, if I wasn't unable to do it, I would say, oh, I really wish I could help, but I'm just busy, you know, or, oh, I'm already scheduled to do something else, whatever. So, you know, little things like that, that make it a little easier to say no. You know, little, I wish I could help, but I'm already, you know, I've already got plans, whatever. When it comes to people who you have previously been codependent with, they, you'll quickly learn who is real, so to speak, and who you might need to distance yourself from based on how they behave when you do try to establish those boundaries. So it's harder to establish a new boundary with an old person. I don't mean old, but I mean a person you've already known, right? So in those cases, if you need to have a discussion about it with someone, if they're important enough to you to give them that opportunity, you know what I mean by that? There are some people who you won't even, some people are brick walls, and you know that you're not going to waste your breath trying to explain anything to them. Am I right? and then on the flip side of that, a lot of times with these existing people in your life, some of them will go, you know what, you're making a valid point, and I'm, you know, I'm on your side. But again, in any case, you can almost always say something like, I really wish I could help, but I'm busy. Or if, let's say, for example, someone comes to your house and they won't leave. You ever have one of these, like the perpetual house guests that never leave, whatever. In that case, you know, you could just tell them, you know, I really wish you, I could have you stay longer, but I've really got all these things to do, or whatever you need to say. Like, you say something, I think it's a two-parter. This is just a phrasing thing I'm going to share with you. So on side one, I would say, you know, I wish that I could do whatever it is that you need to do, or I would do what you need me to do or ask me to do, but I have this other commitment already, or whatever. Even if that other commitment, you don't even have to tell them what it is. Maybe it's just that you want to sit in the bathtub for the evening, you know, and have a glass of wine. That's okay. It's not their business. My point is, yeah, that's my point. The other thing I want to say is something that Dana actually, I think, initially brought to my attention. And that is, if somebody, and I don't know, I know you, Dana, you talked about the way that a person makes you feel, and something, you know, how your boundaries can kind of be based on that. And I think I would add to that, and have added many times, with any person in your life, if they, when you walk away from them, if every time you spend time with them, they make you feel bad or anything other than at least okay, then maybe that's somebody that you want to consider, you know, stepping back from. And I think a lot of us get obligated to people in our lives who do that. I was certainly feeling obligated to people in my life who had me by the proverbial throat in similar situations. So yeah. Anyway, Dana, thoughts?
Yeah, I agree with that. Absolutely. Yeah. Boundaries, you know, learning where ours are and how to go about setting them with other people is an absolute challenge. And it just takes time and practice and the willingness to kind of do the work and to take the time also to kind of do a little bit of Monday morning quarterbacking, where you're doing an analysis of how did your strategy go? So if you have a coworker or whoever it is, that's doing something that's making you uncomfortable, you know, and if you approached them with it, then thinking about, okay, how did that go? Do you wish you would have done something different? Do you like the way that you handled it? What was the result? Does the boundary need to be redrawn? You know, really kind of diving deep and thinking about what worked and what didn't work and why, and then what you need to do next.
Yeah.
100%. This sounds like a lot. I just want to add, I know it sounds like a lot and that can feel very overwhelming, but it does get significantly easier with time.
Yes.
And, you know, and it can, with certain people that are respectful of your boundaries, it can even get to the point where you don't even think twice about it. And it's just such a non-issue because there's so much emotional safety that's already built in that relationship that you know that you can bring up an issue or a concern and they'll handle it with care and consideration, you know, and that they can do the same. And so people then in those dynamics, which can be very rare, it's a lot more comfortable bringing up things. But in other situations, you know, it can cause tension. But I think when you get to the place where you realize that, you know, it's just boundaries are just a kind of a non-negotiable thing. Like they're necessary in your life to protect your emotional and physical and spiritual and financial and overall safety. And if a person continues to cross them, then that's unacceptable. Do you know what I mean? And it just kind of makes it easy. Like, okay, this is what I need in my life to stay safe across in every dimension of my life. And if this other person doesn't seem to understand that for whatever reason, that's not my issue.
Right.
Like I don't have the time or the desire to go around training other people on or teaching them on how to make a good fit in my life. Like, mm-hmm. But like Angie was saying, it's a lot easier to do with newer people than people that you've had this longstanding pattern with, where they're used to you behaving a certain way. And so every time you behave differently, they take that as a personal attack.
Yes.
And this is why when people start going through personal growth, that a lot of their old relationships tend to crumble away because you're growing and changing as a person, and other people, especially those that have benefited from you not having boundaries, they're not okay with that. And they could take it as a continual attack.
Yeah. And I was working on my Instagram stuff earlier today. And one of the quotes I came across as I was, you know, curating content for that was something like, as you begin to set boundaries, you will notice the people in your life, certain people in your life start to fall away, and just, you know, certain ones are left, and let them, because those people, if they're not willing to bend with you and flex with you, maybe they're not your people. And I don't mean that like they're not your family, but maybe they're not people that you want to give a whole bunch of your time and energy. And sometimes it's okay to just kind of step back and distance yourself a little bit from somebody who makes you feel obligated in a way that makes you uncomfortable, you know?
Yeah. Yep. 100%.
All right. Let me double check here. I've got a few more questions. So do you have any thoughts on how we could, and I think we kind of have touched on this, but navigating through different emotions, because as you, especially in early in recovery, and this question comes from the group, how do I navigate through all these emotions? And they change on a daily basis. Anger, sadness, jealousy, repeat. I can totally relate to that. Mm-hmm. I'll just say this. Personally, for me, it's about keeping my head in the right place. And what I mean by that is when I catch myself ruminating, dwelling on something I can't control, I ask myself this question. I say, is there anything I could do about this right now? For example, let's say you're feeling jealous of a new supply. First, I'll remind myself, well, it might look pretty from here and right now, but as we all know, this person goes in cycles, and pretty soon that woman or man will feel, and in my case, it would be a female, obviously, you know, this person will be going through exactly what I was going through, right? Or let's say, whatever, I think about the logic side of it first. Do narcissists change? No, they don't. Or at least it's never happened in my lifetime that I'm aware of for any significant amount of time. Do they have patterns? Yes, they do. Is the beginning of the relationship always like, yep, it's perfect. Oh, okay, that's normal. But then the other side of that coin is to stop ruminating. And so that is when things like pattern interrupts can be helpful, where, like we talked about earlier, where you do something to sort of shift it up. Like one of my favorite ones, I know I've said this a million times, you guys are probably sick of it, but one of my favorite ones is an affirmation I have in my own head, which is, I now cancel that thought and replace it with this affirmation of my true divine desire. And as you can see, I have to think a little bit to remember that. And the purpose of that is then I go from my, like, my reptile brain or my child brain or whatever you want to call it, the inner child kind of shuts up for a minute, the right side of the brain, and the left side kicks in and goes, okay, hold on, let's be logical for a minute, let me think about this thing I'm trying to remember. So the point is, there's some neurology involved in that, but it's very highly effective if you do it intentionally. So it's like when if you're telling a story you've told 1,000 times, and then somebody walks up to you, you're at a party, you've told this story 1,000 times, somebody walks up to you and they're like, hey, blah, 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 something else. You stop telling the story, you turn to this person, answer their question. Then you turn back to the person you're telling the story to, and now you don't remember where you were in the story, even though you told the story 1,000 times. You might not even remember which story you were telling. That is an example of a natural pattern interrupt, right? So if you think of that and you think, well, let's just say at that moment I wanted to shift into some other story or some other mood or whatever, that's the perfect time to do it, in that little bubble of time where you're kind of going, wait, what? What was I thinking about? You know, take the moment right there and go, okay, well, in the case of, I now cancel that thought and I'm going to replace it with this affirmation of my true divine desire. What I always do at that point, at the end of that, is think of something or say something I want or that I'm looking for or that I love or I'm grateful for. And whether it's related to the other thing or not, whatever I was trying not to think about. Right? This is, again, one of those in the moment coping techniques that allows you to sort of get a little bit of emotional distance from it. Because for me, I've always done better if I can sort of look at the facts like a scientist first, and then sort of step back 3 steps and figure out how my emotions connect to those facts. Because when you understand that this person is demonstrating, for example, gaslighting, or they're demonstrating projection, or whatever the thing is, whatever technique they're using on you, if you can recognize it as a manipulation technique, a manipulation technique that is commonly used by people like this, for me that takes the sting out a little bit, and it causes me to see it as less personal of an attack and more of a their personality issue, not me. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I would say. Do you have any thoughts on navigating through those emotions that change on a daily basis? Early in recovery.
I think one of the things that I know for sure helped me mm-hmm. is to get it out of your system. So writing it all down, or if you're not a writer, you can do turning on the voice memo on your phone and just talking it out. And it's like getting poison out of your system. You know, you're literally just throwing up and throwing up and throwing up, and it's throwing up on paper. You're throwing up into your voice recorder. You're just getting it out. So if you don't know where to start, you can just start with the topic. So if there's jealousy, just start off. Okay, today is November 17th, 2020. I am sitting here thinking about jealousy with my relationship with John Doe, and, you know, insert name here. And here's all the different ways that I felt jealous then, and here's what I'm feeling with jealousy now. And you start just barfing out about that emotion, and then you can switch to another emotion. So start fresh. Okay, now I'm going to talk about anger, and here's everything that I'm thinking about anger.
I just want to add something here.
Mm-hmm.
I actually almost, then I stopped myself because I was going to interrupt you, but I almost said journaling or some version of that. And I agree with you. And I do this myself, and I'm not going to let you read this, so don't be taking any screenshots or whatever. but I have just recently been journaling about some stuff I was stressing out about, because, you know, I get it. And it really does help. You're absolutely, I mean, whatever it is for you, like you said, it doesn't have to be journaling. It could be voice memos or a lot of people, like I mentioned earlier, type into your phone. Very helpful. Sorry, go on, Dana. I didn't mean to interrupt.
Yeah, no, that's okay. And it is helpful. And a lot of times I think when we have these kind of, this rehashing of thoughts, where it's the same topics, ruminating thoughts that keep coming up over and over and over again. I'm jealous, I'm angry, I'm sad. Mm-hmm. I'm jealous, I'm angry, I'm sad. How could he do this? How could she do this? Da, 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 da. Only if things would have been different, you know, over and over and over again. A lot of times I think those feelings come from feelings that we had that weren't allowed to be expressed, and communication, things that we wanted to say that we weren't able to express. And so we're kind of left with all of this unsaid and unfelt things. And so getting that out can really help. But I would say what can also help at the end is then signaling some sort of closure, even though I'm not a fan of that word, a completion statement, we'll say that, a completion or a closure statement, where you would say something like, okay, well, that's all I have to say right now. And, you know, I feel like I've said my piece on this topic. I'm done for today. Thank you for listening to me, or thank you for allowing me to vent. Okay, goodbye. Or now I'm choosing to consciously move forward with my day because I deserve happiness. I deserve to have peace in my life. And now I'm going to move forward and do that. And every time you feel that jealousy or anger, whatever uncomfortable emotion it is, surface, to do that. So to vent, but then to also have some sort of statement, just acknowledging to yourself of, while all of this is true, I have anger for all kinds of very valid reasons. I am consciously, I'm so glad that I was able to say this. And I am going to move forward with the rest of my day with light and love in my heart. And the best revenge is a good life. And I'm doing this, you know, I'm doubling down on my happiness because I deserve it.
100%. I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I want to say really quickly, Linnell, congratulations on finally moving out. Do you have a question for us, Dana?
I do.
Okay.
This is from Kit, who says, how do you let go of inappropriate guilt over a narcissistic parent allowing abuse to happen to your sibling when you know you were strong enough that you should have been able to prevent it or stop it?
That's so hard. Okay. Can I say this first of all?
Sure.
I think unless you were the custodial sibling of that child, and what I mean is unless you were an adult raising that child in your home, and then the abuse happened, you cannot in any way, shape, or form take responsibility for that. Just because you may have been physically strong enough to stop whatever was happening doesn't mean that you were allowed to stop it, nor does it mean that you wouldn't have been criminally punished if you had tried. You have to recognize sometimes, I know it's painful, but sometimes in situations like that, the very best thing you could have done would be to just be there for the sibling. Now, I don't know what the age difference is here. I mean, if we're talking about 20 years, I still don't know what you could have done unless you had the resources to legally go after the parent, I guess, or call the authorities. But even then, it's so iffy. I mean, I guess I would want to know more about the situation. But in general, to recognize that, assuming you were both children when the abuse occurred, there was very little that you could have done. And I think if it was a different situation, I would need to know more. But in general, we're raised by people who teach us who to be up to a point, even though we aren't necessarily who they want us to be. But we're brought into the world in a way that you don't know any different. I mean, think about it. If you grew up in a cave and there was no internet and there was no people besides the people that your family allowed you to see, you would think that was the whole world, you know? So it's a similar deal, I think, where, you know, if you're a child and you're in a situation where someone's being abused in your home, I mean, look, even if you're physically, you know, you're 16 and you're big and you're bigger than your mom or your dad, you're still a child. And I would ask you this. If someone in your life who you care about, I just see this super, we'll get to your super chat, Jonathan, in just one second. If for any reason, you know, you're in a position to, what's the word I'm looking for, Dana? if there's anything you can do, then you should, but you can't always know. And when you are a child, you don't have the right or even the, it's not the right, it's the authority. And if you were raised in a situation where you were taught that this is life and this is how it is, you know, I guess I need more information about the specifics. But Dana, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, mine are along the same lines as yours. You know, if assuming that both of you were under the age of 18 and were living in the home, you know, a child, first off, it's the parent's job to protect their child. Mm-hmm. So we've got some major kind of parentification and role reversal going on here. If the mm-hmm. if the child is feeling overly protective and like a parent to the other child. So this isn't what would be considered like a, for lack of a better term, like an inappropriate role for the child to be in. It's too much power and responsibility for a child. And a child is a child. They're not an adult. And they don't have, they have very you know, limited ability to act in a situation like that, especially if they're dependent on the adult that's doing the harm. So I think seeing the situation through the eyes of an adult now, instead of through the eyes of that wounded child of, oh, I should have done more to protect my siblings from this abuse. Giving yourself kind of that grace and compassion of you did the best you could at the time. And this is, I mean, it's incredibly difficult for children with abusive parents. You know, there's a lot of that survivor guilt of, oh, if they end up leaving the home or whatever, and a sibling is still being abused. But there's so much fear and anxiety that goes along with being raised in abuse. And kids realize, like, I can't say anything or else, you know, I'm putting myself in jeopardy too. So there's just, there's so many dynamics at play. So I guess I would encourage you to just give yourself that grace and compassion of this was not your, within your ability to do a lot about. I mean, really the only recourse a child has is to be able to tell a trusted adult what's going on in the home, but that's terrifying.
You know? A lot of times, even when you do, I mean, at least in my experience, sometimes when you do tell the trusted adult, that's it. That's the end of it. I mean, that happened a couple of times growing up. So it was, I don't know what else was done or said beyond that, but nothing happened, you know? So But I wanted to add something to that. And I think I've talked about before, and that is to, in this case, I would say if you were under 18, imagine you talking to yourself at that age, you this age talking to that kid that age, right? And so what would you say to a child or anyone you love unconditionally in that same situation, whether it's your child or your child self or whatever? Think about what would an adult say to a child who was trying to say, to blame themselves for something that they had no control over, you know? Just like Dana said, be compassionate with yourself. Really important.
And along the lines of what you're saying, Angie, I would also encourage a person to then take the next step and assign appropriate blame. So you were carrying this burden that it was not yours to carry to begin with and was way too heavy for you then and now. It was just too much. It wasn't an appropriate burden to ever be placed on a child.
That's right.
And so then now going back through the eyes of an adult, assigning appropriate blame, and maybe this can be another part of like a journaling or like a voice memo type exercise of saying out loud to that abusive parent, you know, mom or dad, this was the behavior, you know, the way that you treated me, the way that you treated my brother or my sister, this was absolutely not okay. I carried this around for years or decades, thinking that I should have or could have done something different, that I should have been there to protect him or fought you off or do whatever. And I felt guilty about that for a long time. But now I realize that's not my guilt to carry anymore. It's yours. You didn't protect us. You were abusive and it wasn't right and it wasn't fair and it wasn't okay. And I'm angry. I'm angry you cheated me and my sibling out of a childhood. I'm angry that we were placed in this role. I'm angry that I've been angry for so long. None of this is okay.
I know that you're allowed to be angry. And I don't know about you, Dana, but growing up, I was not allowed to be angry. So it's okay. And it's actually healthy. It's part of the grief process. So embrace it. And but if it becomes toxic, then let me know. I'll help you release it. All right.
Hey, well, and real quick, and I would say at the end of doing some sort of assigning appropriate blame statement, I would end it with, and now I'm returning this back to you. This is your guilt to carry, not mine. I'm returning 100%. This back to you.
Yep. And that's something very similar to what I do when I talk about writing the letter, when you're ready to get closure, but you're not getting it. You know, at the end of the letter, you say, and now, even though you don't deserve it, I'm forgiving you because I don't want this toxic energy in my life anymore. You know, and it's anyway. Okay. Jonathan Warren sent a $5 super chat. Thank you. In the name, he said, of female narcissist abuse and recovery. So I'm guessing Jonathan, like a lot of us, has experienced abuse at the hands of a female. And I'm sorry that you went through that. And I appreciate your contribution. So I know we're getting really low on time, but I saw several people asking for a U&A to try to see if I could see the question from U&A. Let's see. And I don't see it. Do you see a question from U&A? No. There was a question that was asked apparently before, and I don't know if I just missed it. Oops. I did not mean to do that. Becky with braids, I apologize. I think I just accidentally. Okay. Anyway, Becky with braids, thank you for being here. I did not mean to bump your account like that. I accidentally put her as a moderator, and I didn't mean to do that because I didn't even ask for permission. No. So I'm just looking for this thing. Okay. Do you have any, do you want to grab one more question? I don't see the question from U&A. Do you see that?
I am scrolling through as we speak. I'll let you know if I come across it here.
Okay. I see that one. Let's see. I'm trying to see. Nope. Okay. Oh, there's a space. Okay. Hold on. I'm getting there. Anyway, so just for those of you who are new around here, let me say this. If you missed the beginning of the session today, if you have questions that you want to ask that we didn't get to today, you should put them in the comments below as soon as the session ends. It might take it a minute to officially end once we go offline, but you can also put them here, but we're going to be more likely to see them in the comments below so that we can address those for you next week when we start the session. I'm waiting for the call back. I thought it might be worth keeping.
I'll just mention this real quick. There was a comment from Mystique about support lines, and they keep saying that they're not available. Like to either leave a message or they'll call her back. My guess is a lot of these things are probably in-person support lines, or, you know, that people can't do this from home, and just due to COVID that they're probably running on a very small crew. So that may be it. I know a lot of them also offer a text service. So that might be something to look into for the domestic violence hotline. You can Google domestic violence hotline and see if they have a text alert thing, that text service that you can text with them and get some of the answers or, you know, support that you're looking for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that. I have not found Peggy's question, UNA's question yet. So I guess we'll hope she asks it in the comments below so we can address it next week. If you do, I'll promise you that we will at least attempt to answer it next week. Okay, Dana, anything else you want to share before we get ready to wrap up for today, or questions you want to grab or anything?
No, I think just, okay, well, here's just a comment from Jack, who I really like. It said, he says, reestablishing trust and intuition takes practice and small wins. And I agree completely.
Baby steps, baby.
Yep. Baby steps. And you know what it feels like when you feel like an uncomfortable emotion, you know, and that's a sign that something needs to change. So,
yes.
And 100%. Your emotional safety is just as important as your physical safety, and both are worth protecting. Mm-hmm. So you matter.
Yep. Right on. I 100% agree with that. And I think that's the most important message of the day always for us, is that you do matter. You're not alone. And I'm sure you already know this, but y'all aren't crazy. Sometimes yeah. I feel like people need to hear that. I did for a long time. So, yeah. Klaza, hello. That's a whole other, please take your, put your questions in the comments below after this, or if you want to, I'll post on my community tab, and I'm sure Dana can do the same thing, for next week for additional questions. All right. Thank you everybody for being here. We appreciate you so much. We will be back next Tuesday over on Dana's channel, which is Thrive After Abuse, right here on YouTube. And Dana, what other days do you stream over there?
Wednesdays for right now. Wednesday evenings. Yes. At 8:30 PM Eastern Standard Time.
Okay. And here's another thing really quick. If you text Angie Live, all one word, to 33222, or Dana, what is your number?
I'm still trying to get a short code number from them.
Okay. For now, Angie Live to 33222. I will text you whenever the two of us go live together, or I go live on my own. Dana's working on that. And Dana, yes. I can probably try to help you with that too. Okay. Okay. All right, everybody. We'll see you soon. Have a wonderful week, and big hugs and love to you.